This week on Straight Talk Africa, the International Monetary Fund says slow economic recovery makes countries in sub-Saharan Africa more susceptible to instability. Also, the income gap with the rest of the world grew bigger. How does this affect the life of citizens on the continent? What kind of politics and policies can help? Straight Talk Africa starts right now. Hello and welcome to Straight Talk Africa. I'm Vincent Macquarie. Every year, international organizations conduct extensive research, observing growth patterns and then make informed predictions about the state of the world's economy. In its latest report, the International Monetary Fund is making an urgent appeal to countries to build fiscal resilience so they can withstand unforeseen crises such as pandemics, wars, or skyrocketing inflation. VOA's Ignatius Anor reports.
Kristalina Georgieva, head of the International Monetary Fund, says global challenges such as climate disasters and the rising cost of living are a stark reminder of the need to prepare against such shocks.
When still part of the population needs support and half of the world is going to the polls, the time has come to adopt medium-term frameworks for fiscal consolidation. We recognize one size does not fit all. The pace and speed of consolidation would vary depending on country circumstances. So will also the balance between mobilizing revenue and improving spending efficiency. What is very important is not to forget the burden should not fall on the most vulnerable people.
Georgieva spoke at last week's IMF spring meeting. At a session on providing access to electricity to nearly 600 million Africans, Akinwumi Adesina, president of the African Development Bank, told VOA that a solar project to power the continent is already underway.
We are mobilizing already $20 billion to implement a very bold program, which is called Desert to Power. Desert to Power will develop 10,000 megawatts of electricity, connect 250 million people to electricity via the solar, all across the Sahelian countries. And that's going to be the biggest solar zone in the world when we're done with it. We already started.
World Bank Group President Ajay Banja spoke to VOA about a partnership with the AFDB to get 300 million Africans connected to the electricity grid by 2030.
There's the financing, which we're making commitments of more than $30 billion from IDA plus the private sector. The second part is working with governments, and today with the African governors, I talked about the role governments have to play, both in terms of making utilities possible to work with, making transmission, regulatory policies, all that.
At the annual meetings here in Washington, the IMF said it has the financial backing from members for its poverty reduction growth, resilience and sustainability trust. It has reached a target of nearly $30 billion in 2023 to enable it continue to be at the center of the global financial safety net in such uncertain times. Ignatius Anor, VOA News, Washington.
Well, thank you, Ignatius, for that report. After four turbulent years, the outlook for sub-Saharan Africa is gradually improving, according to the International Monetary Fund in a report it released in April. Growth is expected to rise from 3.4% in 2023 to 3.8% in 2024, with nearly two-thirds of countries anticipating higher growth. But the funding squeeze persists, according to the IMF, as the region's governments continue to grapple with financing shortages, high borrowing costs, and impending debt repayment. But what does all this mean? And how will it affect the political realities on the continent? For more insight, I'm joined by Zainab Usman, director of the Africa Program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. And from our London studio, we are joined by Joel Kibazo, consultant on Africa. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Let's actually begin in London. Now, Joel, the IMF said that, Africa's economy is growing, would grow at least 3.8%. Sounds like very good news. But realistically, what does that translate into? What does it mean to millions of people out there who say they're struggling just to make ends meet?
Well, Vincent, first of all, it's very good to be with you. But I mean, what does it really mean? It means that the challenges that the continent has been facing for the last 4 years are still very much persistent. For instance, inflation. Yes, inflation has come down, as the IMF has said, but it still continues to be a real problem. The cost of living for many Africans, and I spend, you know, a lot of time on the continent, more or less once a month, I'm on somewhere on the continent. That me and what I see are people still continuing to struggle with their everyday lives. Yes, the growth is improving. We've come out of COVID, but those effects continue to linger. So that the government still have to deal with higher borrowing costs. They have come down. Inflation has come down. However, we are still having to meet those very big challenges.
Yes. So, Zainab, just along those lines, for the common, you know, citizen in an African country, what do they expect to see in their lives? I mean, in terms of these predictions, what changes?
Thank you for having me here. These forecasts from the IMF are meant to be aggregate. They tell us the bigger picture. But obviously, if you are an ordinary African citizen, whether in a Kenya or Nigeria or Angola, you might think that these numbers really seem to be pulled out of thin air. A lot of people in these countries are heaving under the burden of inflation, under the burden of currency depreciation, etc. So I think in the lives of ordinary citizens, you are definitely seeing the impact of slow growth. There is definitely growth on the African continent. 3.8% is significant. It's actually higher than global growth figures of 3.2%. But this is not fast enough for the African continent. The average population growth rate for the entire continent is around 2.8%. So the growth numbers need to be much higher to be felt.
Definitely. And because yes, these percentages mean something depending on the level of development of any economy. 4% increase may not mean the same in Africa as it means, say, in the United States. But going to back to London, Joe, countries are being called upon to build their fiscal resilience. Now, how do these countries do so when we know that so many of these countries are first burdened with this high interest, loans, and also they have shortages of funding? How do you achieve that?
It is a really difficult thing to do. However, countries do need to build their fiscal resilience because, for instance, we were suddenly faced with this thing called COVID before, and now in many parts of the continent, particularly in the southern part, we are now faced with El Nino, and we've seen the effects in Malawi, and we're seeing weather-related effects elsewhere on the continent. So we do need to build that resilience. And how do you do it? First and foremost, you have to raise more money locally. And by that, I mean that what countries are being urged to do is to look at all ways of raising taxes in some form or the other. Secondly, bringing most of Africa's population remains mired in the informal economy. Bringing those people into much more of the formal economy, that will increase your taxation. That will increase the amount of money you have to be able to spend. Thirdly, you're going to hopefully have renegotiations that will enable you to sort of bring your debt burden down, or at the very least, your pay repayments down, which means that if you're hit by any shocks, that means that you are at least able to address those kind of issues. Lastly, it's also about implementing skills development and innovation. Those are things that will help each and every one of our countries on the continent.
Yeah, and quite a tough one there. Zainab, you know, is talking about raising money locally. We've seen that happen in certain countries. For example, I saw that in Kenya where, you know, new taxes were introduced. We've seen that in Nigeria where they restructured the whole system, you know, finance, the currency restructuring, perhaps even dropping things like subsidies on certain goods. How do you do that without squeezing further the citizens who say, when you raise taxes, we're left with nothing. Mm-hmm. We get poorer.
A very pertinent question. And indeed, that is the reality for a number of countries. You mentioned Kenya, Nigeria, even Ghana. These are all countries that have either reduced subsidies or they've raised taxes. And combined with currency depreciations, citizens and even small businesses are really feeling the squeeze. And indeed, in the IMF's Regional Economic Outlook for Africa, they do make it very clear that countries need to strike a balance between boosting revenues and ensuring that they're not necessarily cutting essential spending. So it's a very tricky and important balance to strike. I would say that in addition to raising taxes, because taxes are being raised and people are being squeezed, so we need to be very careful there. We also need to think carefully about the kinds of taxes that are raised. We need to make sure that they are progressive taxes that do not penalize the poor. And there's a lot of analysis on this, on different kinds of taxes. Value-added tax, for example, tends to be considered by economists and experts to tend to penalize the poor. So we have to be a little bit careful about over-raising value-added taxes. I would say that also looking at the efficiency of public spending so that leakages can be blocked to ensure that more revenue is being retained. More broadly, also thinking about accelerating progress with regional integration to make sure that small businesses are able to trade across the border, and that could also generate revenues for governments, I think could be a very, very important dimension to all of this. But I would say that there are measures to plug leakages to ensure that there is more efficiency in spending, maybe also a reallocation of how different government expenditures are kind of conducted could be very, very important and useful on this front.
And you know, indeed, Joel, the whole question of are not hurting the citizenry, because we know we've seen VATs up to 16%. I mean, some people just can't believe it when you tell them that that's the value-added tax that some people pay. But in terms of fiscal discipline, yes, we talk about raising taxes. Most citizens protest first because they complain about what they see as government wastage to begin with. Could the resilience be built first by, you know, plugging all the areas where there's a lot of pilferage, there's a lot of obvious, and it's actually publicly acknowledged, you know, corruption by government officials especially?
Vincent, you're absolutely right. And but the key thing I would say is this. First and foremost, we need to widen the tax base. The tax base in many African countries remains very, very poor. So in other words, you know, you find countries where it's just 8%, you know, only who pay taxes. So first and foremost, you've got to do that.
But isn't it the reason being that up to 83% of the people actually work in the informal sector, and they're not able to be brought into the mainstream because the systems, the governments do not put in place the infrastructure to facilitate this 83% of people to come into the mainstream economy?
Sure, absolutely. You're absolutely right. And I think that is where this, one of the points I was going to make is this, that this has to be a contract with the people. And this is where the politics comes in, you know, that people will feel they're able to at least make a contribution to taxes if they feel that money is going to things that they can see, be it roads, be it schools, be it hospitals, rather than in, as you mentioned, corruption or leakages, as Ms. Usman has talked about. So, yes, it's about widening that tax base. And one of the ways that the countries have started doing it is by looking at digital ways in which you can bring previously informal businesses into the formal sector. That way you can also tax them. But they must also feel that there is a reason to pay tax. So there has to be a political element of people having confidence in their governments, because if they only see corruption, if they only see the leakages, and they see unwanted waste of big cars and all of that, when they really can't see anything, they see no results, there's no aspirin in their hospitals, then of course they will not feel that they should be paying taxes. And in fact, we'll find ways of ensuring they're never part of that ecosystem of the formal economy.
Yeah, well, we'll continue exploring that. Let's take a short break now. And when we come back, we will discuss wage discrepancy, the income gap between sub-Saharan Africa countries and the rest of the world grew bigger. Can this create a fertile ground for more instability? We'll have some answers when we come back. Stay with us.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
Why would a woman choose to be part of a polygamous union nowadays? Culture, economy, free will? And is this type of marriage beneficial to both women and men? On the next edition of Our Voices, we will explore the issue, ask questions, and hopefully get some answers. Join the conversation each week right here on Our Voices.
You're watching VOA's Red Carpet. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us each week right here on Red Carpet. We bring you the latest in...
Welcome back. We are talking about how economic trends triggers policy shifts, changes in politics, and changes in our daily lives and livelihood. I'm joined by Zainab Usman, Director of the Africa Program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. And from our London studio, we are joined by Joel Kibazo, a consultant on Africa. Now, Zainab, we talked a bit about, expanding the tax base. Now, Joel has mentioned that it helps when citizens understand why they are paying. But have you seen any effort actually to really involve citizens in the whole question of taxation? I've seen in some countries where the leadership just says we're introducing a tax on this because we need to raise funds for, let's say, affordable housing. But people don't seem to understand why they need to pay that in form of tax. So what needs to be done by governments in order for citizens to feel that they're involved and also to get a feeling or a sense that the money they're being taxed is actually going into the use that is beneficial to them?
I would say that people typically understand why they need to pay taxes. They understand that taxes are used by governments to fund public services, whether hospitals or schools, etc. I would say that the problem in quite a number of African countries, especially the countries that are very big and maybe that have multiple levels of government, is that there are often multiple taxes. You know, there's tax at the national or central level. There's tax at the multiple taxes actually at the municipal level. These are often unharmonized and very kind of disorganized in a sense. So there's a need to streamline some of those local level municipal taxes, I would say, because they tend to be quite onerous on a lot of people. The other element here is, what our colleague just mentioned, trust, building that relationship of trust between citizens and their governments to ensure that when the taxes are raised, they are spent effectively and efficiently. Whether it's a matter of making sure that there are effective anti-corruption measures, that there is more transparency, I think that would really go a long way.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be very difficult now with all that a lot of African citizens are undergoing in various countries. Taxes, value-added taxes are being raised, and you can see all these posts on social media where people go to restaurants, I don't want to mention any country, and they put up the receipt and you see like the value-added tax is like a lot.
Yeah.
People are getting angrier, and it's essential for them to be comforted by the fact that those resources that are being generated from them are going to be spent and used effectively.
And especially also when they see that government officials get richer and richer, they live a life of luxury when the common citizens who pay taxes actually are struggling. Now, Joel, we just mentioned that, you know, the IMF has also pointed out that there's a widening gap in income between sub-Saharan African countries and the other parts of the world. What is leading to this? What does it mean to a common person in an African country?
Vincent, it's all about what we were talking about actually in the first segment. You know, if your economies are not doing well, your overall, then the incomes being generated, the money being generated by that economy, it is bound to ensure to result eventually to sort of those income falling. And that is perhaps what we've been seeing in the continent. We do not have industries that are sort of growing and therefore be able to generate greater returns towards the gross domestic product, the country as a whole, and therefore being able to raise incomes. Secondly, we also do not have a widespread network of labor negotiations so that those that are in the formal economy, yes, some countries, I mean, Nigeria particularly has some strong unions and parts of some of the Ghana economy, but in many parts of Africa, you still do not have that strength of being able to negotiate so that incomes remain as they are set by those who are paying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he who pays the piper calls the tune. And so you find that incomes are not rising. And thirdly, there is no accountability. So nothing will be done. There is no impunity. And just to go back to a point Madame Usman just made, that really that accountability factor is so important. And increasingly, we are going to start seeing political challenges, because with social media, people are able to look at the corruption. They're able to discuss things like the leakages through government. And they're also asking increasingly, why is my income not growing? Why are my wages not and salary not growing? Whereas those in government are 4, 5, 10, 20 times more than mine. So those questions are going to start leading to what I think could be political instability. So we really need to start looking out for that as well.
I mean, we have seen people protest, like doctors who would not have their salaries
yes.
increased, but politicians can increase their own salaries because actually they do decide how to do it and when to do it. But along those lines, in terms of the ability of citizens to pay more taxes and even their wages to go up, also there's a limitation because of the burden of debt. Most of these countries are straddling with all old debts, new debts, big debts. How can they then manage even to get anywhere closer to fiscal discipline or resilience when so much of the money has to go out anyway to pay taxes, to pay debt?
Sure. I think the debt question is also linked to the earlier question you asked, Joel, about the divergence in income between a lot of African countries and really other regions of the world. And this, to a large extent, in addition to other factors that Joel mentioned, has to do with a low or slow productivity growth, productivity of labor, but also a firm-level productivity. And this, in a sense, has to do also with the quality of infrastructure in a lot of African countries. So till date, electricity access on the continent is still less than 60%. Yeah. You do need electricity to be able to conduct certain kinds of businesses, for businesses to grow, generate revenue, and then generate taxes, right? So I think these things are all connected. The fact that the continent still has a low levels of manufacturing value added as a share of GDP is still less than, I think, like 13% or so, the levels where the continent was in the 1970s and 1980s. Wow. This is really unfortunate. And again, this links to why governments are not able to generate sufficient revenues from their economies, and therefore they have to resort to significant levels of borrowing. They're borrowing domestically, but they're also borrowing internationally. And this is, in a sense, the chickens are coming home to roost. So the question of debt and the debt burdens also link closely to the fact that there's slow productivity growth in African economies.
Yeah, which actually the debt burden is an old problem and we haven't figured out yet. So Joel, is there do you see a situation where like African economies just don't know how to get out of the pit? They have to keep borrowing to build things like infrastructure, but also paying back becomes a painful pill to swallow. What is the way out?
I think, yes, governments will have to continue borrowing, but I think people need to sort of, the leaders have to sort of look at the way they're borrowing. For instance, borrowing locally, in terms of local currency, is so much better than borrowing in foreign currency. Now, sometimes, of course, the local market cannot provide that amount of money. But secondly, you need to sort of say, what are the terms under which you borrow? If you had borrowed, say, six, 7 months ago, international interest rates, if you're borrowing abroad, would have been so much higher than they are now. So things like timing. And thirdly, take the advice and say how much can you borrow and the times of repayment. Because if you have those things being dictated by outsiders, rather than clear negotiations with understanding of both sides of what the challenges are in the country, then that is where you get countries eventually falling into default, as we saw, by 2023, we had three countries that are completely defaulted on debt. And so, I mean, those are things that everybody has to really look at and be realistic about. Borrowing will continue, but we need to be realistic.
And you know, you make a great point there, because there's been a lot of discussion as to whether African countries even attempted to negotiate the terms of some of these debts, especially with like China and so on and so forth. But Zainab, coming here to studio, Joel did mention a bit about, the dangers, political risks, and, the risk for instability ensuing from unstable economies. You know, countries like Nigeria, for example, yes, there's been a growth projected, I think, at 3.3% this year, but at the same time, the country is grappling with high inflation. There's been a lot of suffering among the people. Do you see a danger politically here in a country like Nigeria?
Sure. I mean, the danger here being, I would say it's multiple fold. It's that growth is quite slow. People feel that the pressures that they are under might not be easing up soon. So there's the depreciation of the currency. It has lost something in the region of 60 to 70% of its value within the last 1 year. There is inflation and then the removal of subsidies. I mean, it's kind of going on and on.
Right.
And
so,
I think the government has attempted to do some communication there, but more needs to be done. And I think it needs to be made clear what the broader economic strategy is for the country.
We'll explore this further next time.
Yes.
We have to leave it there right now. Thank you both, Zainab Osman, Director of the Africa Program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, and Joel Kibazo, Consultant on Africa. Thanks to our affiliate stations for broadcasting Straight Talk Africa across the continent. I'll see you next time.